Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. I'm Kevin. I live in Los Angeles, and I'm a Democrat with a slight lean to the conservative side.
I'm Jonah. I live in Blue, Maryland, and I am an independent.
And I'm Greg. I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I am the liberal Democrat.
So please check out our More Perfect Union podcast at moreperfectpodcast.com. Also, check out our first Facebook page, facebook.com, More Perfect Union Podcast. And please rate and review us on iTunes. It helps us get more listeners and someday might even earn us a couple of bucks. With that in mind, let's go right to the topic. So what's in the news this week? It's not going to earn us any money, folks.
You're hoping to break even, right?
Yes, right. This week in the news, well, the news was dominated this week, unfortunately, during the holidays, the Thanksgiving holidays here, by the Planned Parenthood shootings, which, of course, is a tragedy that really shouldn't be partisan, but partisan politics seems to creep into everything these days. Greg, I'm curious, what's your take on the shootings and how they're affecting the presidential campaign?
Oh, you know, it's what's one of the first articles I read about it was this morning. Well, no, it was yesterday, where it said none of the GOP candidates had really anything to say about it. Which, you know, it's Planned Parenthood, it's a shooting, you know, what do they say? You know, it's guns, Planned Parenthood, it's kind of a tough thing to, you know. And then this morning, Mike Huckabee said it. He said, this is domestic terrorism.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And I can count on my one hand the number of times I've agreed with Mike Huckabee this season, right? Yes, it's domestic terrorism. Someone came in with an agenda, a political agenda. He used violence and terror, that's speech impediment, to try to spread it. It's domestic terrorism. And let's hear it from Mike Huckabee. You know, he called it what it was, and he was the first one to do it. And I think that goes a long way, you know, for him to say it.
Let me jump in and say two things. First of all, that's the first time you've ever said anything nice about Mike Huckabee, so I'm a little concerned about you today.
Oh, I know. I'm very tired. I did a lot of driving this week.
And I'm actually going to be the contrarian here and say I somewhat disagree with you and Huckabee on that. I'll briefly say why. Yes, I mean, obviously we can define this as domestic terrorism, but I think using that label allows us to avoid what it really is, which is right-wing political terrorism. Just like they get angry when we say, it's radical jihadist terrorism. It's not Islamic radical terrorism. This is the same thing. This is not American terrorism. This is right-wing terrorism that was spawned by Carly Fiorina and every Republican or conservative in Congress and in the Senate that has made Planned Parenthood an issue and a target.
Oh, let's not pretend. You're right.
But what I'm saying is that by using that label, it deflects it from what it really is.
Oh, I see. I think. Oh, wow. So you think by saying this is just homegrown, good old USA, yeah, terrorism, instead of we're giving it a label of a brand of white Christian red hot heat terrorism, which is instead of saying like Muslim terrorism.
You said it better than I did, frankly. Yeah. That's it. Jonah, what do you think?
I think, similarly, some of the first headlines that I saw were from that were sort of leaning a little more left, did try to make those comparisons, right? Like saying, and I think Fiorina like came out, you know, blaming the liberal media for, you know, daring
it's
to.
It's the media
whatever.
That's making this a partisan
so,
thing.
Right. Like, and I see that, and I guess I'm either all in or I'm all out on it. Like if we want to do that, then I agree that I don't want to call it American terrorism. I would call it Christian terrorism, because he was motivated. This the shooter was motivated by his Christian faith. And if we want to say that there are these Muslim terrorists and these Jewish terrorists and these Buddhist terrorists, then we also have to say, then we've got some Christian terrorists here, and we have to treat them equally. We have to monitor their churches. We have to track them wherever they go. We have to put vans, unmarked vans, outside their secret compounds. And we're either all in or we're all out. We either put all religion on the table or we take it all off the table. And I can, when I'm feeling particularly cranky, I want it all on the table. And then I kind of calm down and I say, okay, is it actually religiously motivated, or is it, and this goes to what you were saying, is it political rhetoric that is driving it and not some weird cult church thing? Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think in all fairness, it's probably unfair to call it Christian-based because we don't know how religious he is. You know, to me, it's more of a – I've always thought that Planned Parenthood and the pro-life, pro-choice thing is more of a political issue than a religious issue. There are certainly very religious people that are pro-choice, and there are certainly agnostics who are pro-life. So I think it's more of a political issue, and frankly, it's a political issue that I think was fueled by right-wing hate. I find it interesting that Ms. Fiorina said today on Fox News Sunday, quote, "This is so typical of the left to immediately begin demonizing the messenger because they don't agree with the message." Well, the message was that Planned Parenthood is killing babies.
Wait,
so,
wait,
yes.
Wait. Was the messenger the guy who shot?
No, she's talking about herself.
Oh, she's the messenger.
She's the victim.
Somehow she would be the victim.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough when she walks around with that cross. It must be tough to get Uber that way.
She lied about what was in those videos. She defended the lie. She called Planned Parenthood horrible things. And of course, somebody heard that and acted on it. And boom. But no, she has nothing to do with it. He would have done it either way.
Yeah, I find that hard. You know, DJ, who usually on this podcast, and we miss him tonight. We're all thinking about him, I'm sure. He actually.
you
don't have to laugh when we say
no,
that.
No,
he's going to be listening later on.
I saw him earlier today, and he expressed his regrets about missing the show tonight.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So he's missing the show, but he wrote something in. About
he asked
this
us to read. Go ahead.
He asked us to read. Because he's our resident. He describes himself as the conservative of our group. And he said, quote, I don't have a DJ voice. I wish I did. I'm not even going to do this in fairness, but he says the shooting on Friday was heinous and should be condemned by all as I condemn it now. Those of us who are pro-life hold that position for one reason, to save children. Killing adults has never been, is never, and never will be part of that. I mourn for the victims we have lost and wish a speedy recovery to those we have not. DJ.
And I think that's right. I think that the vast majority of people, I don't know, even though if we want to guess, 99.9% of people who are pro-life would not go shoot people at a Planned Parenthood center, you
all
know?
Right. So wait, I'm going to take that same thing. Do we say that 99.9% of all Muslims would not go out and shoot anybody then?
Great point.
And can we use that same rhetoric when we talk about Christians versus Muslims? And would this be a opportunity for us then to say, wait, so one crazy guy goes out and does this, but that's not us. Can we use this as a type of examination of our own values of how we look at other people and other religions? Hmm. I don't know. Do you guys see it as that?
I think that's a perfect analogy. Absolutely.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Well, I did, actually.
It wasn't interrupting.
You're right in there.
You're a part of the show. You're not interrupting.
I think ideally we would do that. I think it's hard for most people, right? Because you can look at this as, if you feel passionately about abortion one way or the other, you can look at this as an issue for you. If you feel strongly about gun control one way or the other, you can look at it as an issue for you. If you look at it as, you know, I am a conservative or a liberal and I feel a certain way about how the media distorts my message, I think there are a couple of different angles you can look at this if you are so inclined. And I mean, it would be nice if we could, I don't know what we learned from this aside from that. I mean, really, of all the Republican candidates right now, I also would not have picked Huckabee as the one to speak out. Who would you have thought would be have been the first Republican to say something like this?
Kasich. No idea.
Yeah, maybe yeah. Kasich. I was kind of thinking Bush. I kind of thought Bush.
Yeah.
Might.
Yeah.
Bush has never been able to say anything eloquent, well, on time, on point, without a sock or foot or boot in his mouth.
Well, and his father and his brother are the same way, but, you know, every once in a while they were pushed and they, you know, some crazy thing happened and they had one good turn of phrase that held everybody for a year, you know? Well, I think it's in him. I think it's in him to say something like that, to say
he
like
has one that ability, yeah.
From heart. Yeah.
See, here's my take on Bush, and I should preface this by I am not a Jeb Bush fan. You know, he showed some courage when he came out on the right side for a Republican on the right side of the immigration issue, which was to show some compassion and some understanding and realize that we have to deal with the issue as it is, not just deport 11 million people. But and he also said, you know, you have to lose the primary to win the general election. Since those two statements, he has not lived up to that lofty principle. And he knows in his heart that, I mean, to the extent that I can say I know what Jeb Bush is thinking, he knows in his heart that, you know, Trump and these other people are on the wrong side of the Muslim issue and the refugee issue. But he also knows that saying anything will destroy his chances of a you know, even a decent showing in Iowa or New Hampshire. And he's not man enough or principled enough to say what he knows to be correct. So Jeb Bush to me is just another politician. He's as dirty as the rest of them. And this idea that he's some type of guy with integrity. Kasich has integrity. Jeb Bush just wants to be president. Hmm.
Well, so this sounds – oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. We're way off topic at this point. So.
Yeah. I was going to say this sounds like a transition into like there's a some of the stuff that's been going on with Trump's language recently. About, you know, Muslims and monitoring people and blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to read you guys this definition, right? There's been some articles recently daring to call Donald Trump fascist. And the word fascism, the word fascist, they've been sort of on my mind lately as something like, can we actually use these words without them being some kind of a third rail? Is it always the left that's declaring that every moderate Republican is a fascist? So if it's all right, I'm going to read you the Merriam-Webster definition.
Wait, before we do
yeah.
that, is there a possibility that every moderate Republican is a fascist? I mean, I'm just going to throw that out. Like, it could just be.
Well, I'll tell you what. If we want to talk about language and we want to use accurate words, then well, let me read this to you.
Let's just read this.
And then perhaps
we
can.
We could.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So this is Merriam-Webster. Fascism, a political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and often race above the individual and that stands for a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, severe economic and social regimentation, and forcible suppression of the opposition. And that is their number one definition of fascism, which to me, it doesn't talk about Mussolini. It doesn't talk about World War II. it taught that is a pretty weak definition, isn't it? Like,
no,
it's
no. I mean, I think that, I mean, Mussolini is an aspect, and World War II is one aspect of fascism, but I don't think it's like the catch all of, you know. And I think that's a pretty general.
Yeah.
Basis.
So the idea that it's nation led by one autocratic dictator that supplants the rights of the individual, right? So, and we can think about different politicians, different American presidents that maybe have been nation over the individual, but haven't been so dictatorial.
Well, like Nixon, perhaps.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about Ronald Reagan's, you know, was it the America thing, right? The Dawn of America, New Day in America. What, his big thing where it was like, me and Bruce Springsteen are going to bring America back, right? And in a certain way, he was much more eloquent than Trump was. But Trump has that same message. I'm the only one who can bring America back, right?
Sure.
Now, do you think that the right looks at Obama, and when they call him a fascist, that there is something similar in this definition? Like, is this such a vague concept that you can see whatever you want in this mirror?
Well, first of all, the right calls Obama everything that ends with IST, so or ism. So to me, they'll call him anything. You know, they'll call him a Kenyan. It doesn't make a difference.
Right.
But, you know,
I actually had to explain the difference between communism, socialism, and I can't remember what the other ism.
Totalitarianism?
Yeah, I had to explain all three because all three were used in one sentence to describe. And this was a Thanksgiving dinner last year.
But let me say this, you know, the Merriam, if we're going to use Merriam-Webster as the definitive definition, which I'm not sure is necessarily correct, it does say, you know, that exalts the nation and often race above the individual. So when they talk about Trump possibly being a fascist, I don't think they're talking about the first part of that. I think they're talking about the second part, which is the implicit suggestion that the Anglo-Saxon race is better than Mexicans or, you know, people of Latino descent, or is better than Muslims. I think that's where it comes from. I just want to go off topic for 1 second to come back and say, I realized that when we were talking a few minutes ago about the Planned Parenthood shootings and I started talking about Jeb Bush, I conflated that with Muslim and Syrian refugees, and I took us off topic. And I just wanted to clarify that I screwed up there because, frankly, my family and friends listen to this and I don't want them to think I'm a total moron, which I partially am. So
it's okay. That's why we have scorecards that we send out to everybody with them. Go to the moreperfectpodcast.com to print out your own scorecard.
And rate how big an idiot Kevin is. But anyways, coming back to fascism. So that's my take on it, that it's more about race than about nation.
Oh, that's very interesting, actually.
Yeah. So it's a combination of enforced patriotism with we are the chosen ones, like there's a certain ethnicity or religion or something like that that are the true patriots. So that is that what we think this is?
I see that a lot. I see that in like America, I love it or leave it. Like we get it and you don't. You know, and you know, I mean, heck, we saw a Trump rally. You know, and I'm going to use the word rally, and I hope you picked up on that. You know, he said, "Get that guy out of here," and his what do you call the word? I don't want to use the word supporters. Can I use stormtroopers? Yeah, his stormtroopers beat the crap out of the guy. You know, just because he didn't agree, and you know,
yeah, I think so. I want to. You know, my position has always been Trump really amuses me. And this whole thing is just is a spectacle and is a show. And I'm a fan of landing a helicopter on stage. You know, that's crazy. And so I've been amused by this, and I've been reluctant to really enter the dark side of Donald Trump. But I think that what we are seeing is a consistent message of some kind. I don't want to say race baiting. I don't want to say he is drawing a line between us and them, and frequently them are not white dudes.
You know what's funny is I come from a family of conservatives, and they will tell me all the time that all the racial problems in this country comes from our current president. You laugh. And I'm going to be the conservative guy, and I'll tell you.
No, it's true. Racism was cured until Barack Obama became president.
Right. And the reason is that all of his efforts and all of his – this is the thing that I get told quite often, because I think – and I'm like, yeah, please, go on. I haven't had my coffee yet. Please tell me. And they'll say, well, you know, all of his efforts, and the only thing he cares about is, you know, people of color or Muslims or nobody but the white, because, you know, it's so difficult being, you know, white in America. And I go, you're kidding, right? This is a joke. And they'll go, no,
they're not kidding.
And they're not kidding. And I'll keep waiting for them to say, ba ba da ba ba da bump, the aristocrats. but, you know, because I can't think of anything more offensive. But they don't. And I'll say, really? Because, yeah. But no, they blame all racial strife right now. And they're like, he's so divided. You know, if only he wasn't elected, we would have no problems. Ferguson wouldn't be an issue. I said, well, we'd still have police officers beating up. And, you know, we're seeing this still today. And they said, right, but it wouldn't get the attention and you wouldn't have riots.
Yeah, because there would be no such thing as cell phones and video cameras, right, and body cams.
Right.
And, if it wasn't for Barack Obama.
Right. And they're amazed by this. So this is the mindset. And if Hillary gets elected, it's going to be her fault.
Yes.
Women get paid just as much. And blah, 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 blah. I mean, I'm truly stunned. You know, if I have to hear this poor white guy speech again, you know, it's tough being a white guy.
And here's three white guys complaining about how tough it is being a white guy.
It's, trust me, it's not. It's, man, it's pretty awesome at times.
Pretty awesome.
So is Trump a fascist? Is that an accurate term? Or is it even if we like go through the definition and make sure that we check off all the boxes, is it still too inflammatory even if he meets all the criteria?
Out of all the guys out there who are really pushing the buttons, and I don't even know if he's really, you know, I think Cruz is up there also. Cruz would love to be doing the same thing. Is he a fascist?
I'm going to jump in.
Sure,
I think that that's probably too strong a label, but I think there are elements of fascism in what he's doing. That doesn't make him a fascist. Does that distinction make sense? That I think that he's probably unaware of what he's doing, other than trying to, you know, appeal to Iowa voters and the conservative element of the Republican Party. Here's my take on Donald Trump. I don't think he believes about 25 to 50% of what he says. I think that he says whatever he thinks the audience wants to hear.
It's a show.
So does that really reflect his feelings? I'll bet if we went back to 2007 and interviewed Donald Trump, he'd probably say nice things about Muslims. He'd probably have a much more moderate view on the plan. I mean, obviously he was he was pro-choice for a while. So, but again, coming back to the whole fascism thing and his, you know, comments about Latinos and about Muslims, I just don't believe it truly reflects his feelings. I think he's playing to the audience.
Hmm. Best case scenario is just play into the audience.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could be wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you know, that's the optimist in me. I love mankind. I love everyone. I'm like Ben Carson, who, by the way, is having. How's that for a segue?
That's a great segue.
And people compare me to Ben all the time. Ben's having a little bit of a bad week there in the polls, isn't he?
It's done. It's done. Stick a surgical knife in him. He's over. Wait,
he's that right? He's Herman Cain of this year.
Yeah, I mean he's whatever you want. He's the he's had his 2 weeks. People were like, "Oh, I think he'd be a great." Oh, wait a second. I've actually listened to his views. I now, what do you guys think? I mean, what do you think that this, you know, this is just a dip or is this a nosedive?
It has to be permanent, right? Like it can't. Like when you look at his trajectory, there are people that like him. They like his manner. They like whatever about him. And then it's a bandwagon and everyone jumps on and then he gets some attention. And then even the people who are his supporters can say, he doesn't seem to know much about the economy. He doesn't know much about foreign policy. Well, I guess there's, you know, I think that's it. And this is the vetting process. Maybe this is the benefit of running for president 2 years before the election. I don't know. Like, you know, the person who can actually make you feel kind of nice when you're not actually listening to the substance, but you're just sort of looking at him like, oh, he's not mad. He has a nice smile. He's a good guy. He's got a picture of himself with Jesus. I like him. And then, you know, yeah. And so when you guys were talking about the older polls and we look at these trends, you know, I don't know. It's like, I think his time is done, right?
Well, you're probably right, but here's the opposite view. If I'm playing devil's advocate, and this has been put out there in the media, I'm not the first person to say this, that he and his advisors probably realized that he kind of stepped off the cliff a little bit. He pulled a little bit of a Wile E. Coyote there, and he's scrambling back for the cliff right now. So he's trying to play up the nice guy image, as opposed to talking about actual issues. He published an op-ed in one of the newspapers, it was the Washington Post or the New York Times, where in about 450 words, he referred to God or him or Jesus 10 times. Just today I was reading an article that he went on a tour of Syrian refugee camps and he's determined that they're actually nice people. Really quite nice, he said of them. Or that the camps are really quite nice. So he's trying to show that he's this – because his strong suit is people like him. They just want a guy they like as president. And he's trying to use that to maybe get back in the game. And who knows? Because frankly, we were discussing before the show began, things at this point in 2008 and 2012 looked very different than what ultimately happened in those two primary races on both sides.
Well, not ridiculously different, though.
Well, 2008.
2008, definitely. But in 2012, well, where were we at 2012?
Well, at this point,
2012, Romney was just about.
Romney was in second to Cain, but he was on the uptick and was about to overtake Cain.
Right, and Romney had pretty much led. Romney had led almost the entire time, except for some reason, Perry had taken it, and then Cain had taken it.
But, well, Bachman was up there, and Gingrich was up there for a while.
And Santorum towards the end. Yeah, no, with Romney's thing was like he was a consistently strong second, but the people who are, you know, not in his camp were like, can we go with this other guy? No. Can we go with this other guy? No. Can we go with this other guy? No.
Right.
All right. It's Romney. You know?
It's Romney. But no one, I mean, no one's even close to the numbers that Trump has. I mean, except for Carson.
So Carson's got, right now he's at about. Yeah. So if Carson's at about 20% or a hair under, hair over, something like that.
Yeah, right. He's, yeah.
Where do those – if you are telling the pollsters that you are a Carson guy, And then Carson continues to lose support. Who's your second choice? Is it Trump?
Well, no, this is the interesting thing, because I did hear on one of the news shows today, they said that, you know, the latest Quinnipiac poll has Trump at about 25 or 28, 28%, Carson at about 18%. But they said that the numbers that Carson lost are not going to Trump. Mm. They're going to Ted Cruz. And interestingly, I think when Trump loses voters, they go to Ted Cruz. So we may see a late surge by Ted Cruz in the next coming couple of weeks. He's already, I think, second in Iowa.
Yeah, but Cruz went in the last week from 25 to almost 29. He jumped up 4 points. And you're right. Cruz went from, in that same time, he went from 10 to, 12. You know, I mean, Trump is crushing it. You know, I mean, you know, it's at that same point, Carson dropped 7 points.
Well, you know, in Iowa, and again, that's just one poll, and I've heard people say it might be an outlier.
Sure.
But in Iowa, in the latest Quinnipiac poll, which was just released a few days ago, it was Trump 25, Cruz 23. And he's clearly on the upswing, Cruz is. So who knows?
I just don't see Cruz. I can't imagine him getting the nomination. I can imagine him. I can imagine him surging, and I can imagine him placing strong and maybe winning a couple of odd states here and there.
But he's the type of guy that wins Ohio. Excuse me, Iowa. He's the type of guy that wins Iowa.
Oh, totally. But he is not the type of guy that wins Ohio.
Right. No, exactly. No.
And I think the entire country would be really reticent to elect anyone from Texas again.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think of that.
Especially a Canadian from Texas.
Well, they might balance each other out.
A Cuban Canadian from Texas.
Man, I don't know.
That would just be ridiculous. I mean,
no, Cruz is not going to be the nominee because he has too many enemies within the party. So he can't coalesce enough people to support him. You know, even Mitch McConnell, I don't think could. Well, he probably would endorse him because he's got no scruples either, but he hates him. So, but, you know, it could shake things up if, you know, he comes in first in Iowa and then Trump does not do as well in New Hampshire as people now think he might. It could just open up the field.
I think what's probably likely for Cruz is that he is going to hit a surge, right? I think that there is going to be a time when Carson continues to go down. Rubio gets a steady tick up, but it's not a big rush. Cruz passes Rubio and Carson. Maybe he hits Trump, and then people look at him, vet him, and count him out. I think that's – we might be seeing the beginnings of that right now.
No, if you ask me, I think Trump's going to – going to win it. Although the New Hampshire Union, it's the big paper, they just endorsed Christie today.
Did they?
Yes, like the big statewide paper. And funny was he was on Meet the Press, the publisher, and they were asking why Christie of all people, and he was like, "Look, we're not endorsing Trump. We're not endorsing Carly. We're not endorsing any of these yahoos. We got to go with someone we trust, Christie." And they're like, "Well, you know, he's like, you know, like fourth in your state," or if, and he's like, "Christie."
But you know what? He might be really well positioned. You know, I always thought that Christie's biggest problem was that he was too harsh and he wasn't going to play in Iowa, and he's still not. But if somebody like a Carson or a Cruz wins Iowa, and Christie can have a solid showing in New Hampshire, he could be the one that the moderates rally around. And he would be, I think, a very tough candidate for Hillary Clinton to run against.
He would be great. Side note, the publisher in New Hampshire was pissing and moaning because of all these media magnets about how they decide who's president with all these polls. And he goes, he goes, "I just remember the good old days where the people voted." And they were like, "So, you know, and you?" He goes, "We would tell, you know, we'd give these endorsements." He goes, "But it was the people." And I was like, you jackass, you had this huge endorsement where you decided who got the
you tell people who to vote for, but the pollsters are the bad guys. Right, you just tell people who to vote for.
And no one buys your paper anymore because they don't have to because they get it for free. And now you're all pissed off. It's like, I was so jackass. But that's a whole nother story. Christy is set up great on the East Coast. And it could work out really well for him, especially if he continues to get endorsements like that. And he's very personable, which I don't think Trump, Rubio, I think Rubio went in there with his big boy suit and, you know, did not impress anybody. I still don't think he impresses people when it's one-on-one. So
I got to say, as a Democrat who wants to see a Democrat win, the one that I'm most concerned about running against is Chris Christie.
Oh, no. Once again, if it was the general right now, yes, but he can't win a primary.
Well, that's what I'm saying is who knows? Who knows? Yeah. He might be the guy to surge. But speaking of who's surging, and we are, on the clock here, should we look at the Democrats and what's happening with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders?
I think Hillary's just crushing and taking names, right?
In the national polls, she is. But, and I think that you know where this is going. You're just setting me up here. But interestingly, a New Hampshire poll came out just the other day that shows that Sanders is back in the lead in New Hampshire.
Killing me.
He needs one of those states to remain viable.
But it's only New Hampshire.
It's only New Hampshire. But, New Hampshire could portend a shift, in South Carolina and in Nevada. And then who knows what happens?
Nope. Never happen.
Well, again, just to make the show interesting, I'm a very difficult person to live with, I'm going to be the contrarian here, which is to say, the knock on Bernie, well, one of many knocks on Bernie, is that he has no support among blacks. He has weak support among women, that all of his support is centered on, the millennium demographic and a small segment of the party that's ultra liberal. But I'm going to go out there and say, if he were to win New Hampshire by a respectable margin and maybe win Iowa or come in a solid second in Iowa, a respectable second, he's going to get enough media play. I wouldn't be surprised to see blacks in South Carolina start to find him. Okay. I don't think it's unlikely that he could get 30-40% of the black
vote. I'm going to ask you right now. Don't look this up. What do you think right now? There was just a poll. And what do you think the average number – there's three polls actually. But what do you think the average number is that Hillary is leading in the polling?
I know what it is. It's somewhere around 55-32 nationally.
Okay, just in South Carolina.
Oh, in South Carolina, and I can't look it up. I'm going to say it's 68-28.
No, it's about 50.
Oh, okay. I thought she was doing better. Even now, I'm going to click it.
It's about 50. I mean.
Wait a second. South Carolina, I'm looking at a CBS YouGov poll that says it's 72-25.
Oh, dude.
And PPP says 72-18. Mammoth says 69-21. I was actually too low on Hillary.
Right. But that's she's leading by 47 on that 72-25 if you do the math.
You asked what she was up. I was talking about what I thought the actual numbers were.
No, she's up. I do math. Yeah.
Yes, it's up by anywhere from around 48-50 points.
So, I mean, when you say a respectable lead, Sanders would have to, win by a respectable lead. I mean,
I really don't think that the polls in the other states mean very much right now because if Sanders – comes in with a really strong showing in one or both of those states.
You think is a strong showing. I mean, honestly.
If he wins New Hampshire by more than 2-3 points, and then let's say in Iowa he either wins by a slim margin or he comes in within 10 points of her in Iowa. This is my analysis, okay?
Okay.
I think there's going to be enough. You remember, okay, so he loses Iowa, but he has, you know, a not as bad a showing as some might have predicted, and then he wins New Hampshire. After that, all the media buzz is going to be how Bernie Sanders embarrassed Hillary in New Hampshire. It's happening again, just like it happened to Barack Obama. You know, she's going to be embarrassed, and all of this starts to play. I think those numbers could shift dramatically.
What if he gets blown out of the water? I mean, like, she's leading by like 11 points.
Listen, caveat. If he loses both states, it's over. It's over. And I don't care if he loses by 2 points. If he loses both states, she's the nominee.
And so I'm talking about nominee regardless.
Well, here's the thing.
I don't know.
The thing that I keep in mind with this is, like, I don't think that Bernie Sanders can do anything to beat Hillary Clinton. I don't think he can do anything. I think that she can beat herself. I think we've seen her before trip over herself and make misstatements, and who knows, maybe the Republican secret conspiracy against her actually produces something. And the thing is, like, I believe that she's done some crazy thing, and I believe that they're crazy enough to not stop digging until they find it. So nope. I think that – I don't think Sanders can do it, but I think that – I think that she can do it. I think she can blow it.
Okay. Oh, there's no doubt that if some new scandal erupted, a real scandal, yes, it could absolutely reverse things.
Look, Trump made fun of a reporter with disabilities this weekend to his face, you know, and then later on said, "I never did that. I have a very good memory." And then they showed video of it, and "I never did that." And he still...
So he said, I never met the guy. And then they proved that he met him. And he said, oh, it was like 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
The guy with a very good memory. Oh, I guess maybe I did meet him.
Right.
But amazing.
Nothing will affect anybody's vision or brand of these people. The people who hate Hillary will continue to hate her. She could be found with, "Oh, we noticed that you have a sacrificial knife to Chahuthala and a small dead child."
You know, this is interesting. I want to end with something that I think is humorous.
Sure.
It occurred to me, you know, I used to write for Saturday Night Live, and sometimes I try to think of sketch ideas. And if I was writing an SNL sketch, I would have Hillary Clinton, played by Kate McKinnon, following people around in Iowa and pretending to find a $20 bill that they dropped and saying, "Oh, look, you dropped this. Oh, I couldn't keep it. I wouldn't feel right. Really, it's yours." And doing other things to show how honest she is, because honesty is her big thing. I'd have a shot of her in a restaurant saying, "You forgot to charge us for the appetizers. Please put it back on the bill. We need to pay a little bit more." I would do a series of things like that. Obviously, it's not funny because no one here is laughing at it.
I would have one with her and Donald Trump sitting there, like, just, "Oh, hey, how's the thing going?" And then sit there and then betting each other who could do the most heinous thing and then still get away with it. And, like, and then have everyone go, "Oh, no one believes that." And, like, just do terrible things to, like,
trying to one up each other.
Poor children. Right. Like saying, "Oh, watch this." And her standing up going, "Everybody, I shot John F. Kennedy." And everyone goes, "He deserved it. We love you, Hillary." And he goes, "Watch this. Watch this. I have a perfect memory. I faked the moon landing. It was done in my backyard. We don't believe that." You know, just one-upping each other.
And of course, you know, and Marco Rubio's take on those two things, that she faked the moon landing and that she killed John Kennedy, would be, "You see, she remembers the 60s. She's too old." So with that, should we go around the horn again, as we do every week, and say, so who do you think is going to be running against each other in the general?
I just said my two. I think they're going to be – that's going to be the final debate, is them saying the worst thing they ever did is
– Okay.
I'm going to say Hillary Clinton is – there's no reason not to say that now. And And I'm gonna double down on my Republican theory in that it's gonna be some kind of crazy contested convention. I think that I think Trump is gonna win a bunch. I think he's gonna get a lot of delegates, and then something crazy is gonna happen, and it's gonna be a great show. So tune in.
Cool. Nice. I like that prediction. I think there's a good chance that happens. But just to be interesting, I'm going to go out on a limb. I didn't even think this before coming into today's show, but I'm going to say it's going to be Hillary Clinton versus Chris Christie.
Oh.
Yeah. Someone, first time I predicted that.
Someone reads papers in New Hampshire.
I just think someone normal has to get that nomination. I thought it was going to be Rubio for several weeks. And now I'm wondering whether it's going to be an upstart or, you know, a surprise come from behind like Christie. So yeah. With that in mind, what do you think, guys? Have we actually covered the weekend?
I think so. I think we did it very well. You know, we're a faster, streamliner group. I think this worked out very well. And I'm sorry that the rest of the guys couldn't make it tonight. And
Well, we missed DJ and Alan and hope to have them back soon. But for this week, that's the More Perfect Union podcast. Thanks for listening in, and we'll talk to you next week.